I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. They say it takes a village to raise a child, but maybe you just need a few moms in your corner. We visit with a diverse group of parents each week for their common sense and savvy parenting advice. Today, preparing for your children to go on without you. Now, we've all talked a lot in the past 2 weeks about the untimely death of pop superstar Michael Jackson, but surely it is his three young children, Prince Michael, Paris Catherine, and Prince Michael II, who are feeling his loss the most. Now, Jackson's death raises a very hard question that no parent enjoys answering, which is, what will happen to your children if something happens to you when they are still young? Who will take care of them? How will they be provided for? It's a question nobody enjoys facing, but it is one that parents with children who are minors need to answer. So to talk about all this, I'd like to welcome attorney Shantice Curry-Try. She practices family law in Baltimore, Maryland, and she's here with us along with our regular Tell Me More parenting contributors, Jolene Ivey and Asra Nomani. I'd like to welcome everybody, ladies, moms.
Hey, Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Thank you. How's everybody doing?
Jolene, I have to put you on the spot. Did the coverage of all of the stuff going on around Michael Jackson's untimely death make you think about your own arrangements with five boys, all of whom are minors except for the oldest?
Yeah, well, we don't really have very much money, so that part of it did not make me feel in any way connected. But all of a sudden being gone and leaving your kids behind, I have thought about that before. Yeah, it's very scary.
It is scary. Asra, what about you as a single mom? Michael Jackson is functioning as a single parent. There are other people in his life, obviously, to help him, but that must have pushed some buttons for you.
It definitely did. When I think about the decision Michael Jackson made to raise his kids alone, it reminded me of my own. You know, and coming over for this program, I pulled out my birth certificate that I've got for my son, Shibley, who's now 6 years old, and I intentionally included just mother's name. You know, it's just got my name, because in Shibley's case, the biological father chose not to have a place in Shibley's life. And for all these years, I have dreaded my absence from this world and what I would need to do. I made a phone call once a few years ago to my family lawyer, my old English teacher, Wendy Alke in Morgantown, West Virginia, and I said, what do I need to do? And she spelled it out for me. But until, again, today, prompted by this conversation, I didn't revisit this.
Well, we are right on time then, I think, Shantice. I think we better get busy here. So I'm wondering if this is typical, is that perhaps an event is what sort of pushes people to do that which they know they should do but would prefer not to do.
Absolutely. It's definitely an impetus for a lot of people, especially my clients, to look at the arrangements that they have in place in case of incapacity or death.
So let's start with the basics. Do you have to have a will? Is a will essential?
I believe absolutely it is essential. And I tell people, I tell my clients that even if you feel like you don't have anything to leave in a will, it is important so that you're not leaving the burden of deciding a lot of issues to your loved ones when you're gone.
What does a will do that not having a will does not do? You heard that Jolene say that, well, we don't really have a lot of assets. So why is the will important in your view?
Well, it allows you to make arrangements for a funeral arrangements. It allows you to ensure as to how taxes are going to be paid upon your death. You can also, although in Maryland, we're not allowed to bequeath children in a will, but you are allowed to appoint someone as a guardian for minor children upon your death. So it is very important, even without assets, to have something in place that pretty much gives direction to your loved ones as to what's going to happen to you or to the things that you own upon your death. Because if you don't have one in place, the state that you live in are going to dictate how things or how assets are left.
So if you don't have a will, does that mean, and I think the people here are most concerned about their children and guardianship for their children as opposed to, you know, all these other issues, their paintings, I think they don't care. But if there is not a will, and let's say you're a single parent like Asra, what happens if something happens to her? Is there a court proceeding inevitable, or what happens?
Well, I think let's deal with it in two ways. There is a power of attorney or a health care directive, which is something that takes effect. It's a piece of paper that you sign, and it takes effect if you're incapacitated, if you are not able to make decisions for yourself. And you can dictate or delineate who is going to have a say for your children. Now, upon your death, then we're talking about a will. And a will is the piece of paper that says, this is what I want to happen with my children. Understanding that, you know, there are two parents. So the natural parent or the other parent upon the death of one parent, that other parent has a right to raise their children. So you're not going to be able to will your children to a third party without the consent of the other natural parent.
What about an Asra's example where the biological father is not involved at all with the child, which seems to also be the case in this well-known example of Michael Jackson that we were just talking about, the biological. There is a biological parent who seems to have no connection with the children.
Right. And in every state, there is what's called best interest of the child. And that is the idea that the children's best interest will always be served. It's above the natural parent's rights to parent their child.
Asra?
You know, because, I mean, I don't know if this is happening to Jolene, but I know that my heart's just trembling having this conversation because I think that this is one of those things that you're just so afraid of as a parent. When you make a decision to have your child, you want to raise your child, right? And so I know it would be my nightmare for my son to be in the guardianship of his biological father. And so I also then pulled up, you know, my situation, the statute in West Virginia for abandonment. And it seems that in these kind of circumstances, that issue of that best interest of the child then weighs into it, those kind of factors.
Jolene, what do you think?
The bigger concern for me is the philosophy of who is raising my child. So one thing that we've talked about in our house is having a family mission statement. It's kind of the philosophy of your family. What's important to you? How do you want to be perceived in the world? What kinds of things do you want to focus on individually and collectively? And there's questions that you answer to kind of come at your mission statement. And you leave behind a document that's useful whether you live or whether you unfortunately pass. If you live, it's a great document for the kids to have and look back on as they go through their lives and be able to say, are we living up to this ideal that we've set for ourselves? And should you pass, it's a document you can give to the guardians so that they can know, okay, this is how Jolene wanted her kids raised.
But what about just the whole question of keeping your family together? Have you made those arrangements?
You know,
I mean, I know, forgive me, that there's a terrible story in the news right now where there's a very large family where the parents were murdered and, you know, people are in custody, but there are 16 children in this family, most of them adopted. And the question is, who is going to take care of such a large family? Because clearly the intention was that they be raised together. Have you figured that out?
What we need to do is put it in writing, okay? But what we have done is spoken to friends of ours, a couple who, you know, we love very much. They've got a bunch of kids, and they say, oh, yeah, if it should happen, you know, we don't mind having more. My kids wouldn't have to move very far. They'd be able to stay in the area and be raised by people who have similar life views that we'd have.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're visiting with Jolene Ivey, Asra Nomani, a regular Tell Me More parenting contributors, and attorney Shantice Curry-Try. And we're talking about planning to care for your children in the event of the unthinkable. So, Shantice, we've talked about the values questions. We've talked about kind of getting this down on paper, but there is the practical reality of wanting to be sure that the assets are there to take care of your children in the event of your death. So what about life insurance, so disposing of property, things like that? How do you think that through?
Great idea as far as with the life insurance, because not only do you want to appoint a guardian for your children, but you want them to be able to have the finances available to them so that they can take care of the children financially. So having that insurance policy is a great idea, but also appointing the children as beneficiaries of the policy and having the guardian named in the will as a person to execute and administer the policy.
Can different people do different jobs? For example, can one person take care of the children and another person manage the dollars? Or is that a good idea, a bad idea?
Correct. Well, it's a possibility. We have here in the state of Maryland, you can appoint a guardian of the person and you can appoint a guardian of property. They can be the same person. It's also a good idea to have a guardian of the person, which is the children, who is not directly related to the finances of what is the estate. Which can include the money available for the children. It is a good idea to have those roles separated in accordance with the will.
What's the difference between naming a guardian and naming a custodian? Is there a difference?
There is. A guardian does not necessarily have custody of the child. They are appointed by the court, and they have authority to carry out the best interests of the children, which is usually financially, but they don't necessarily have custody or possession of the children.
Let's say you perhaps pursue religious practices that might be different from others in your family. I would assume that would be one of the things you would look for in a custodian, someone who would maintain your religious commitments. But sometimes, you know, we live in a very fluid society where you may practice a religion different from that of your parents. Is there any way to assure something like that is maintained after your death?
I would say spelling it out in the will or another trust document, which is basically instructions for the guardian or the custodian to carry out, where all of these wishes are put down in writing on paper. These are wishes that you want to be carried out in case of your death as to how your children are going to be raised, the schooling, the education that they'll receive, what kind of health care they'll receive. All of these things you can spell out in a document, in a will document.
Jolene?
I have a friend who has asked us to be the guardian of her child, the custodian of her child, should something happen to her and her husband. And we have always thought it was kind of humorous in a way, because here we are, a black family, five black boys, and should something horrible happen, we would become the parents of this little white girl with green eyes who's Catholic. And we're not Catholic, but I have promised I would raise her Catholic. She would go through all the things that she's supposed to as a good Catholic girl.
Well, that's a hopeful story.
Well,
that's,
you know, as long as you find somebody who you've gotten to agree to it, and I certainly wouldn't agree to something serious like that and then not do it. Of course, I would hope never, ever to have to go through that. I would never want anything to happen to my friend or her husband. But should it happen, I'm here. I'll do it.
This is Astra. And something else that my lawyer Wendy told me, which I thought was really important, is, you know, she'll be six right now, and her husband died when her son was young, and so she named her parents when he was really young, and then when he was about to enter his precocious teens, she named a friend who would be able to keep the son in the same school district and be able to shuttle him around for all the teenage stuff, and then when he came closer to adulthood, she named her parents again. And so $200, apparently, guess what it costs to arrange your will, and so with that cost, you can keep changing it through there. Lifetime, too.
And well, own. I would imagine that varies from place to place. But Shantice, this does raise a question for me of how often do you think you should revisit these issues around guardianship and all these other matters? How often do you think makes sense?
Well, definitely at any life-changing event, a divorce, a birth of a child, your will should always be reviewed, and codicils, which are additions to the will, should be done if necessary at that point. But typically any time there's a move, if you're moving to a new place, separation, if you want to do just by years, I'd say every 5 years, reviewing the will is always a good thing.
Julian, I have a question for you. Is how do you make yourself face it? Because it sounds to me as though, well, your husband's a lawyer, so you have some advantage. But, you know, yeah. You know, that's like the shoemaker's children have no shoes. I bet you lawyers aren't always Johnny on the spot with this stuff either.
No.
Just because they've got all these other people's stuff to deal with.
We've just decided we're not going to die. You know, like most people, we're in total denial. And we know we should do it, and we haven't. And we do have a friend who's an attorney who does that kind of law. My husband doesn't do that kind of law. But who's willing to do it for us, and we just can't seem to get it together to do it. So it's clearly something that we should all do. I'm absolutely sure of that.
Shantice, what's your advice on this? Obviously, as an attorney who practices in this area, I'm sure you have told all your relatives what they need to do, and I'm sure a lot of people have said, oh, you're just trying to drum up business, or, oh, you know, that's just because that's your job. But what have you found to be helpful to encourage people to do this when they have young children, as we've all discussed, as we all here do, and we don't want to?
Well, it's to tell them the horror stories, and that's what I do. No one expects to die, and a lot of times it's hard to even plan for it. But I've seen in my experience with parents who die unexpectedly, one parent dies, you cannot find the other parent, and you have children who could end up in foster care. You have children who can end up with third parties that maybe that wasn't the intention of the parents for that to happen. So it's telling them what could happen if you don't plan ahead. I think that's the best way to get people in the office and get them thinking about planning their estate and planning the guardianship for their children.
And forgive me for asking, but I must, that there are many programs these days that you can get online and download these documents. I'm not going to mention the sites, but people would say, well, gee, why can't I just download the paperwork off one of these sites on the internet? Isn't that good enough?
And I would definitely say no. Each state is different as to guardianship and custody laws, case law. It varies from state to state. And although the underlying thought is that it's always in the children's best interest, but how that's interpreted is always different. So my advice is to always seek the advice of an attorney when dealing with these issues, because you don't want to have a document that is not recognized in your state, and therefore it is not carried out according to your wishes.
And finally, Shantice, where are these documents kept? If we finally do all get our act together, pinky swear, we're all going to do it.
Have you done it?
Ask me no questions. I'll tell you no lies.
I'm going to do it, and I can guarantee you Diana Ross will not appear.
So we all get our act together, and we all get these documents in order. Where are they kept?
Keep them in a safe place. Your attorney's office is always a good place. I keep copies of everything, every will that I do. Also, upon a death, the will is probated. It means it becomes a public record and it's available in the courts. But you should always have the original documentation. Keep them in a safe, somewhere where, with all your very important documents. And also tell somebody where they are so that they're easily accessible when they're needed.
Attorney Shantice Curry Tri practices family law in Baltimore, Maryland, and she joined us from her office in Baltimore. We were also joined by our regular Tell Me More parenting contributors, Jolene Ivey. She's also a state delegate in Maryland, and Asra Noumani, who's also a journalist and professor at Georgetown University, and they were here with me in Washington, D.C. Ladies, moms, thank you.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
Now, if it was hard to follow all the details we talked about, don't worry. On our website, we'll have a checklist reviewing the kinds of documents and issues we just discussed. That's the Tell Me More page at npr.org. Next week, we're going to revisit this topic, and we're going to place a special emphasis on same-sex couples. We'll talk about the special steps they might need to take to address guardianship and custody issues in the event of the death of a partner or a spouse. So please check in for that conversation. And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.